the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome to Business Rockstars. Joining me right now, Scott Fisher,
Hello.
Founder and partner at Select Management Group. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell everyone, what is Select Management Group?
So we are a talent management company and entertainment company, primarily working with digital talent, YouTubers, Instagram, social media stars, whatever you want to call them, helping them in every area of their career, books, TV, film, creating new businesses with them, just everything that they would ever want to do. And we also produce content.
Awesome. I'm so excited to talk to you about this today because everyone knows influencers are hot. They know that they should be adopting some of the tactics that they use, perhaps working with influencers, but it's a relatively new space. So there's so many questions around how it all works. So I'm excited to ask you those questions. First of all, how did the idea come about and how did you really start this company?
Yeah, so I met someone who was doing YouTube and I was so kind of confused by it all. And like, how do you make money? How do people watch you? But at the same time, I was kind of part of that generation as well. So I understood how it all worked. I just didn't understand how they kind of made a business out of it. Decided to work with them just kind of as a friend. I was in college. They were in college. I was producing a web series, put them on it, ended up deciding I wanted to get into management and sign them, create a company, started working with them, with their friends. It became something that I could actually make money with. I was working at Starbucks at the time. So the day I could make more money doing this instead of working at Starbucks, I was like, let's flip the switch and start a business. Signed them, their friends, ended up, you know, building an office of like 5 people, and then dropped out of college and kept it going.
That is a great story. I love it. So basically, you just started small with a couple clients and it just kind of organically grew from there.
Exactly.
And it sounds like for the most part, you were winging it. I mean, you were self-taught at first how to be a manager. So how did that work?
I always say when you have nothing to lose, you can find the most success because you don't know what, you're not thinking about all the ways you could fail or you can't pay the mortgage or your kids will be disappointed in you. It's like I had nothing going on. So it was like anything from there is going up.
Yeah. There are a lot of our entrepreneurs who are debating when is a good time to start a business. But hey, if you are young, I mean, I think the answer is anytime, whatever age you are, it's great, but definitely don't use your age against you if you are young, because sometimes that's the best time when you are inexperienced and can learn on the job and wing it and you don't have much to lose.
Yep. And with digital 7 years ago, there weren't any rules to learn really in talent representation for digital. It was like not a thing then. So I think I was able to get into it because I was able to kind of make it up as I went and write the rules rather than learning from someone who'd been doing it for 20 years.
So what were some of those rules that you quickly learned?
I think it's the same kind of ethos as an old school manager. It's like protect your client, make sure they're getting paid, make sure you have integrity and honesty. Make sure everyone you work with, you're treating them properly. Like just be a good person kind of 101. And then business-wise, you learn, you know, you do a couple of contracts, you learn how those work, you learn how a deal structure works. And once you do 5, 10, you've done it 100 times.
So, yeah. I'm sure that it was interesting navigating the guidelines of how to protect your clients because TV and film has had those guidelines set for so long.
Yeah.
So you know the standard pay and
usage
and all those terms, you know, within the industry. But then digital is like the wild, wild west.
Yeah.
So how did you learn what you were going to hold as a standard for your clients?
The interesting thing with digital is that talent, they now have the lion's share of the revenue, whereas in television, unless you're like an A-list star, you're still not making as much money as the network is. But in digital, the talent was able to kind of keep control from the very beginning. So I was always surprised when I learned in college that, you know, you might get a 5-10% royalty on something, whereas the digital talent see it more of the opposite, so that the network is taking 10% of what they're making rather than they're getting 10% of the pie.
Yeah.
So everything was kind of flipped. And I learned that, hey, like you can, if you ask for it and you own the audience, It's their content. It's their audience. They can kind of write the rules.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And then you, from there, when you had a few clients, started to really grow. And part of that growth opportunity came with moving to Los Angeles. So tell me some of the steps that you took in order to grow.
Yeah. So we built up the business in Canada, had a few employees, was always profitable, but you know, the sky's the limit with that stuff. So I actually got flagged at the border because I was traveling back and forth so much from Canada that I had to move here, like had to get a visa or they wouldn't let me back in the country.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of like rushed together and got a visa and basically created Select in the US, invested in it, and now work at the company as an employee.
Oh, funny.
Which is funny, of my own company. We kept going. Things just kind of keep happening. The talent grows, the business grows. So you sign more clients. We didn't want to sign tons of clients, but you sign a few more people that you really believe in. They grow 10 times, the business grows 10 times. So it's kind of just finding the right people, supporting them, and helping them keep what they're doing going so that we can build on top of that.
And that's probably the best way to grow is to grow organically, one client at a time, so you're not experiencing a ton of growing pains.
Yeah. And I would rather do one thing really well than try to do 100 things out of the gate and fail at most of them. And build the relationship with one client that can tell everyone how great you are rather than have 10 clients. It's like, yeah, I talked to him a couple times a month. He's fine. But I would rather have that kind of like champion for us, for me and the company. And then you create other, I guess, loyal customers out of that.
Yeah. Has that been the key to growing, is really nurturing your talent so that they refer other talent to you?
Yeah. I only personally work with around 8 clients, and I've only really had 8 to 10 at one time because I want to focus. But those core clients can help other managers who manage clients see what we're doing with them and join the company. And then I can support and work with them that way. And you just have good case studies. You prove success with a few people and other people see that, you know, you care, you did it right, you didn't compromise, and you can just kind of keep going from there.
I would imagine that's a really big thing for talent, is working with a manager that has high integrity and that you can trust.
Yeah.
Because we've all heard those bad stories.
Exactly.
So talent, really, you have to have their best interest in mind.
And when you're working with someone that's 18 years old, they've never made money in their life and their family doesn't have money, it's like they don't know how to handle all of that stuff. And you have to give them the right tools to be a good person, save their money, not get burnt out, keep like their mental health in check. There's a lot of things that people don't think about, even with influencers, that it can kind of get to their head and it can kind of really change their whole dynamic. It's kind of like a professional athlete. They go from making no money to their like $1 million contract the next day.
Yeah. So part of it is probably kind of being a psychologist and helping them stay grounded too.
And if I'm not living that example of treating people with respect, saving my money, just being a good person, like they're not going to either. So I think it's a lot of
leading by example
and, you know, treating them like a member of your family and just being together in the good or bad.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And you haven't had to raise any capital because you've been self-funded and profitable right away because you have gotten the chance to grow so organically. Was that always a part of the plan? Were you mindful of becoming profitable right away?
Yeah. I never wanted to take investment because I never wanted to be swayed by another entity's, you know, the way they do it or the people they need me to work with. So we never took money. And then part of that was just making sure that when I hire someone, they actually have a place in the P&L and we're not kind of overextending ourselves to have them in the company. Cash is always in mind when we're thinking about anything. And I would never just hire someone to have them and, you know, we'll figure it out later. It's always like, what do you bring to the table? Can we afford this? Does it make sense?
Yeah. And obviously, when you're making money, that means that your clients are making money. So it's a win-win. Yeah. It's the goal of everyone within your management group to make money, obviously, but not compromising their values or anything like that. So maybe you can speak to that, actually.
Yeah.
Because I know I have some influencer friends, and I know that's something that they sometimes struggle with, is accepting maybe a brand deal or a partnership, but not while compromising their values and being authentic. Can you speak to that?
I always tell my clients in the beginning, don't work with any brands, don't do anything, just focus on building the audience. If the beginning means a year, do that. If it means 2 years, do that. Once you hit critical mass, you can monetize that audience. If you have 1 million followers, you can make money. But I wouldn't worry about day one monetizing on the talent side, because you're not, A, the money isn't going to be meaningful enough to actually help you live. And it's also just, you're kind of selling yourself short and losing any leverage you had. And you're also probably not getting the best deals or the best partners that you would actually want to work with. So I always say, hold out, wait, focus on what you're good at, build your audience and go from there.
So ultimately it is about your audience as an influencer.
Yeah.
Because if they're not around, you don't have a brand that you can monetize.
And if they don't trust you, or they think you sold out, or you're just not interesting to them because you're living this life now that they can't relate to. Like, that's stuff is super important to be mindful of.
Yeah. So you have to constantly be adding value, however that may look for your given audience.
Yeah.
So you said once you reach critical mass, what would you define as critical mass?
I think it's different for everybody. What they see, either like their lifestyle being or where they see themselves. I have some clients that are so happy being kind of that, you know, if they have 500,000 followers and they're making money and they're happy, like they're not looking for more really. But I have other clients that like, when am I reaching 10 million subscribers? What's happening next? It just depends on the personality type.
And what may be your long-term goals are.
Exactly, yeah. But I think there's a space for everybody, and you know, the whole micro-influencer thing everyone's talking about. There's a, you know, you can make a living doing that for sure.
Cool. Well, we're going to talk about that micro-influencer thing everyone's talking about. And in general, what are some tips that you can take away from influencers, how to work with them? After this short break, we will talk about it all. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business.
Meet Evan Goldberg, founder of NetSuite.
I had to learn that the hard way with my first company. That's why I started NetSuite. I needed to see everything that was going on with my business in one place, so we built the world's first cloud business system. And after 20 years, over 16,000 companies run their businesses on NetSuite. Everything you need to keep growing is in one place. Financials, HR, commerce, customer info, and more. NetSuite gives you the visibility and control you need to make smart decisions and grow with confidence. That's why companies who use NetSuite grow 3 times faster than the S&P 500.
Find out the rest of Evan's story and get your free guide titled 7 Key Strategies to Grow Your Profits at netsuite.com/bigger. That's netsuite.com/bigger for your free guide, 7 Key Strategies to Grow Your Profits. Go right now to netsuite.com/bigger.
You should.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome back to Business Rockstars, where we are continuing our conversation with the partner and founder at Select Management Group. And before we went to break, we talked about the micro influencer. So for those who aren't familiar, if you could define who is the micro influencer?
I mean, I guess it depends on the brand where they see the micro coming in at the follower level, but it's anyone with a small audience that's super engaged. And the idea is that the brands don't have to either don't pay them at all or pay them a very small amount. And they can kind of scale that campaign by hiring 500 micro influencers to get the same reach as maybe one mega huge influencer.
I've heard some people define it as between 10,000 and 50,000 or 10,000, 100,000 followers.
I've even honestly seen people consider 500 followers micro influencers.
Really?
And like there could be like mothers that just have Instagram and kind of found a little bit of a following, and we'll talk about like a dish soap and the brands will pay them and have maybe 50 of those kinds of super micro influencers.
Interesting. I think the key though is that they have a niche audience, right? And so can you speak to from the perspective of a brand and a company working with these micro influencers? Maybe what are some of the benefits versus hiring a mega influencer?
Yeah, I'm biased because we're on the side of the mega influencer in a way, but they see the benefits as they're spending less money all of the time, but they're also kind of hedging their bets and not putting all their eggs in one basket with someone huge because it could go very wrong. You know, you never know. Saving money, hedging their bets. And also they see the audience as more engaged and more kind of authentic because the person that they're hiring isn't seen as a celebrity, whereas a lot of the bigger influencers have kind of become mainstream celebrities in a way. So they're bringing something more authentic to the table.
Interesting. So on behalf of our entrepreneurs watching and listening, if they were to want to work with an influencer, it's micro, what advice do you have for them?
I would say look at your budgets really closely and figure out how much you want to spend from the get-go. Because if you've done your research, you'll either understand that it'll work for you or it won't. So really put a budget in place that you know you can spend and try something. Otherwise, if you do one-offs and you're just kind of figuring it out, you won't actually see any return. And one other thing is to hire an agency, an influencer marketing company, someone to help you handle it all. Not necessarily a company like ours because we're on the talent side representing the talent. But if you hire an influencer marketing company, they can take your budget, tell you what you're going to get. They have the relationships with people like us to come to us and say, how do we do this deal with this client? Those would be the main two things.
And I would imagine it's really important to find talent that is in alignment with your goals.
Yeah.
And understanding what they represent, their voice doesn't match with your brand, the authenticity.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, what is it that you want out of this? Do you want exposure? Yeah. Or do you want sales?
Yeah. And they you have to track it somehow, because otherwise, how do you know if it worked? And usually, even if they don't provide tracking links or have specific things, you can just see a lift in sales. And they usually attribute that to working with an influencer. We've seen like brands report to us like 140% increase on one shoe that one of our clients featured in a video. And there's no other way, you know, that she was the reason that happened.
So obviously every single entrepreneur needs to be on social media.
Yeah.
Whether or not they want to be an influencer is a side note.
That's an interesting world now. Like the entrepreneur influencer world is a whole thing. I've heard so many.
Yeah.
Brands.
Okay. So tell me what you've heard about that.
I mean,
that.
Brands are, I'd say like, what are you guys looking for? It could be like a footwear brand. And they're like, you know, our next thing is entrepreneur influencers. And we want to sign guys with businesses who have huge Instagrams and make YouTube videos about being an entrepreneur. It's an interesting world. You can kind of start a business and then become an influencer out of it, which is fun.
Yeah, that is really interesting. Well, regardless if that's your goal or not, we all know having a social media presence is really, really important.
Yeah.
There's a lot that we can learn from influencers to do it the right way. So for the entrepreneur, where would you say they should start with establishing that real, authentic social media presence?
I think having a handle for your company and for yourself is important, because you don't always represent the things you're talking about on your social media might not always be the exact same thing that you want your company to be kind of putting out there. It might be more personal, which it should be on your personal social media. It shouldn't always be business all the time. That's a big thing, kind of separating it so you can also link back to your business and grow that as a separate entity outside of yourself.
That's a really good point. A lot of times entrepreneurs ask that question. Should I be having two accounts? And sometimes entrepreneurs, their name is their business.
Yeah.
But let's just assume that you have a different name for your business. You're suggesting you have two accounts.
Yeah. Unless, like you said, if someone's kind of, if they're a consultant or something, of course, it should just be you.
Yeah.
But if you're building a separate entity to build value into that business, you should have a separate presence.
And then what? Once you have the two accounts, any advice for maybe what to post, how to really, really establish that voice that influencers do so well?
Yeah, I think it's about sharing things that you think are relevant, that you think people you want to connect with would be interested in. Sharing relevant updates about what you're doing. Speaking truthfully about things that people aren't used to hearing. So how tough this was or how this failed, but you're looking forward to doing something else. Just like bringing some reality into it. Because otherwise, if I go on someone's account and it's just like, killing this project, this was amazing. We have so many cool
Life's
projects
awesome.
Coming
Hashtag
up in the future.
Blessed.
It's like, great. Everyone has amazing moments. Everyone does. But everyone has crappy moments. So just being honest with people and letting them see the vulnerable side of you. Obviously not super vulnerable, but you know, giving people some context.
I like that word vulnerable. And I see that doing very well on social media.
Yeah.
Maybe you can confirm what I've been sensing.
Yeah.
And that's that there's this huge push on social media for being more vulnerable. I think when it first started and, you know, the very first influencers, it was a little bit more aspirational in nature, looking up to the Kim Kardashians of the world, and looking at how perfect their lives were and just admiring it. But now I think people are really craving that authenticity a little bit more and that realness. And so giving people some insight into your day beyond the highlight reel. And it doesn't even, like you said, have to be that it was a bad day or crappy, although it might be, but even just offering some realness, like a blooper or a mundane moment or something like that. So can you confirm, is that a trend? Is
Confirmed.
That real? Okay.
It's all true. Our clients say that Instagram is the highlight reel. That's like the perfect world. It's not real. It's all fake on the profile, but then their story is where you get the truth and you get to see the behind the scenes and they're taking selfies from down here. And then Twitter is even more so of that because it's just so ephemeral that it's just going, and you see different sides of people.
Yeah, that's interesting. Let's talk about the platforms, because it is really important to honor the various platforms and the various tools on those platforms when knowing what to post. So I love that you shared a little bit more perfect put together in the feed of Instagram, a little bit more raw behind the scenes Instagram story. And we are running out of time, so we're not even going to touch on Snapchat because bottom line is Instagram stories really took that over. So forget about Snapchat for this conversation, at least. But we'll end with this. Facebook versus YouTube. What do we need to know about the two different platforms and their relevancy?
I think YouTube has done such a good job of nurturing their creators. They have amazing like summits and they treat them really well with a lot of great communication. And I really praise them for keeping that going. Facebook is just getting into building those relationships. So who knows if someone goes to Facebook and they have a great experience and they decide, hey, I'm going to put all my eggs in this basket. Facebook could be the new place for independent creators. They'll definitely have a shot at long form scripted because they're just trying so hard at it. But I don't see everyone moving over to YouTube or everyone moving over to Facebook. It'll kind of be
They'll coexist and have their own little nuances.
Yeah, and there might be some people that have amazing audiences on Facebook and nothing on YouTube or vice versa.
Interesting. Well, thank you so much for all the insight. Yeah. This has been so interesting.
Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
If you travel for business or pleasure, Hotels.com and the Hotels.com app is all you need to get great deals on all kinds of properties all over the world and with an amazing rewards program that gives you free nights to stay at a property of your choice. Now, speaking of Hotels.com, we have an amazing Tech It Out contest for you. If you feel like you're in need of a getaway but are a little tight on cash, listen up. Each week, Hotels.com and Tech It Out are giving away a $250 Hotels.com gift card to put toward your travels. All you have to do is as follows. Go to Twitter and follow at hotels.com. Tweet out why you deserve a trip, just a sentence is fine, and include the hashtag techitout. That's it. Once again, to be eligible for the $250 hotels.com gift card, one given away every week in August and September, follow hotels.com on Twitter, tweet why you need a break, and include the hashtag techitout. One randomly drawn entry will be chosen each week. Good luck.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. And my rock star today, Chris Valencia, he is the CEO and co-founder of Hit Bottle. Thanks so much for being here.
No, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So here it is, Hit Bottle. Tell me all about it.
Hit Bottle. This product actually took place, the whole idea took place back in 2014. And the Hit Bottle is the first multi-purpose insulated stainless steel bottle that it's actually out there. It actually fits anything between having the ability to be able to mix your supplements up to kind of have your own infuser and tumbler cup in there.
So, very cool. Let's take a closer look. Show me how it
works. So a cool future behind the bottle is that one of the things that we wanted to do, it's going to avoid any type of bacteria buildup, especially when it comes to the mouthpiece. So the cap was actually inspired on a 1930s Ford radiator cap. So it actually locks, unlocks. So it makes it very easy for you to open, going through your day-to-day activities.
Because how is it normally when it is susceptible to the bacteria?
So let's say, for example, everything that's out in the market, especially supplement mixers, the first thing that you do, you open it from the mouthpiece. So let's say you're working out, touching all those dirty weights, you pretty much open it and all the bacteria has been added to the mouthpiece. So,
and again, this one works like how?
So when you unlock it, pops open.
Got it.
So you don't have to touch the mouthpiece.
Cool.
So,
very detailed.
It is. And as you can see, we put a lot of effort into the whole aesthetics. The whole product has been created from scratch. Everything from the rounded bottom base, which kind of prevents any type of bacteria buildup, makes it a lot easier for you to be able to clean your bottle. Just rinse it with a little bit of water, you'll be good to go.
Cool. So what else is in here?
Let me go ahead and open it for you. So I actually have water. So,
okay, so we won't take too close of a look, but I can confirm water in there and stainless steel.
Yes, yes. So,
so what can we see inside of the bottle?
So one of the things that we ended up creating on this new design, we actually ended up creating a single attachment that actually screws into the cap, whether it's for supplements. And the other attachment that we created, it's for a fruit or tea infuser. And one of the things that we wanted to do, it's kind of combine all of our passion for fitness, wellness into one bottle. Like I mentioned to you, this is the only bottle that kind of gives you the functionality for you to be able to go from a mixer to an infuser to a tumbler cup. So you could pretty much go in the morning, drink your protein shaker, to the afternoon, being able to drink your infused water, to, let's say, Taco Tuesday, you just go out for a beer. So you could actually use it for anything. So
that's awesome. So it really streamlines everything. Exactly. And eliminates excess products.
Exactly.
Because it's multiple products in one. So cool. And the inspiration behind this was your and your wife's passion for fitness.
That is correct. Back in 2015, we came home after a long workout, and we realized that we had a collection of 20 different plastic shakers you should in the dishwasher. And we had an idea what we wanted to do by pretty much being able to combine everything under one bottle. It's been 2 years, and as of this moment, we have taken the proper steps for us to be able to continue innovating the product step by step. As I mentioned to you, the first product, yeah, it was very guided towards the fitness community. Now we're actually going after not only after the fitness community, but also the wellness community that actually cares about the quality of plastic that's actually coming into the U.S. And like I was telling, it's been a journey in a way that we have learned so much about plastic. That over the past couple of years, most of the companies that have been bringing all those plastic shakers here in the U.S., they've been focusing on bringing the lowest quality material. And that's
and good. It's not good for you.
Exactly.
It's unhealthy. You're doing these healthy things by working out, or if you're in the wellness community, maybe you're meditating, whatever it is that you're doing, but then you're using a bottle that has plastic in it, so it kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah. So, and all the new attachments are actually made out of 18-8 stainless steel. So we're very excited because now it's going to take the product into a whole different direction. And even though we've made improvements to this new version, we're actually in a 5-10-year journey for us to be able to continue making improvements to what's going to be potentially the next phase of double insulated stainless steel bottles.
Yeah, because this product has evolved a lot from the original one. Tell me a little bit about that.
So the first product, we ended up launching a Kickstarter campaign back in 2015. We ended up raising $125K within a 45-day period. So if you were to look at the first product, and now if you look at the version 3, the first product was very guided towards the fitness community. We had an idea, but just like any other product, it takes time and dedication for you to be able to continue evolving into the ideal product. There's never going to be a perfection when it comes to product. It's more about evolving time after time.
So. And how did you know that you needed to evolve? Were you listening to your customers?
Yes, actually Kickstarter and being able to build a customer base. That's what's been helping us to pretty much get to where we are right now. Being able to listen to their feedback, what's good, what's bad. And trust me, a lot of times what's bad, it's actually what's going to get you to the next level. Like I mentioned to you, we had what was the ideal, perfect idea. But in reality, once you start listening to your customers, you kind of start listening and understanding a little bit more of the direction of the product. So.
And you and your wife left your corporate jobs for this. Tell me about that transition.
Let's just put it this way. It's been a journey. Going and walking away from a secure salary hasn't been easy. But it was one of those commitments that we had initially. If we wanted to take the product to the next level, we knew that we had to make some adjustments. Now we're also learning how to work as a team, and we're evolving as a company. But the first year, we literally ended up making every single mistake that we could have made, not only as a company, but also as business owners. We didn't know what it was going to take to be able to kind of grow the company to the next level, not only from a customer service standpoint, to also from a product standpoint. So it's been a journey, which we're super excited about.
But you're doing it. Tell me about some of your recent successes.
Our product has been distributed to 24 different countries over the past 2 years. So distribution that's been growing month after month. And 100% of our business is actually being done through e-commerce. That's our bread and butter. We understand more about e-commerce than anyone else. In a sense that we know who our target audience is. And at the same time, now that we started our distribution, we just ended up establishing a pretty decent relationship with an international distributor in Europe. So they're going to be managing pretty much every single aspect of distribution in Europe. And here in the U.S., we're going to be continue doing and growing the brand as much as we can.
Awesome. Well, I'm so glad that it worked out for you guys and that you learned from those mistakes. Let's see if we can teach some of our entrepreneurs about those mistakes. Tell me about one in particular lesson that you've learned the hard way.
I will have to say that manufacturing, it's a key element when it comes to creating the product. We have gone above and beyond to make sure our product, it's up to the quality standards of our customers and also quality standards of pretty much being able to bring the product here in the U.S. One of the biggest issues that we had initially was that we ended up having this huge amount of success through our first Kickstarter campaign that, I mean, we were still working at corporate jobs. And unfortunately, we ended up sourcing it through the wrong company. And yeah, I mean, especially when it comes to creating a product, you have to be as involved as you can when it comes to the manufacturing aspect. And I mean, that's been one of the biggest hiccups that we had over the past couple of years, just overcoming the transition from one manufacturer to the other.
And Kickstarter worked really well for you the first time, so well that you wanted to do it a second time. So tell me about this newest Kickstarter campaign.
So the new Kickstarter campaign that we ended up launching, we got funded within 3 business days. We hit our $25,000 goal. And this time around, what we wanted to do, it's going to take a second approach of not doing any type of marketing whatsoever, because we knew that Kickstarter was pretty much all in or all out, in a sense that you can make a big impact in a small group of people, or you can make a smaller impact on a large scale.
And which is better?
I would say we're trying to go after the big impact on a smaller scale. Because our customer base is going to understand more about our product.
To really connect with a more niche audience.
Exactly.
And loyal fans.
Exactly. I want to say 87%, I was looking at the analytics today, 87% of the funding has actually come through our own platforms. As of this moment, we're getting very little visibility through Kickstarter. So everything's been coming through social media, everything that we have done over the past couple of weeks. But yeah, I mean, Kickstarter, it's great. It's a great marketing tool. I believe their existing audience is at 19 million subscribers that are actually backing projects on a daily basis. Out of those 19 million, I think 8.3 are actually US-based, which is definitely giving us the ability to kind of expand our product into a broader market. And we're going to continue launching Kickstarter campaigns. We want to be known as the company that has launched every single product that they have created through Kickstarter.
So if our audience wants to support your Kickstarter campaign, what do they get and how do they do it?
So through Kickstarter on this new campaign, they actually get, they have the ability to back the project with one bottle if they want to, or they have the ability to pretty much order multiple quantities. It goes up to 10 bottles itself. And with this new product, you actually get the whole lifestyle package. You get the new redesigned mixer that it's made out of 18-8 stainless steel, the infuser, and the tumbler cup itself. So that total investment, if you were to pretty much get 4 bottles that are actually going to perform of what we're actually doing into one bottle, you're looking at least $200, which you're actually getting a pretty decent deal that it's less than $45 through our Kickstarter campaign.
Awesome. We'll check it out. Chris, yeah. Thank you so much for your time today.
No, not a problem. Thank you for having us.
You bet. Chris Valencia, CEO and co-founder of Hit Bottle. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. Struggling to get more done for the day? Practice these simple tips to start freeing up your time and getting more done during the day. I'm Alex Worley with the Business Rockstars Minute. Number one, make a daily to-do list. Create a daily list of realistic tasks to tackle every day. Keep it simple, too. Your tasks don't need to be massive jobs that will take hours to complete. Number two, start saying no. Sometimes that little word is the hardest to say, but it's okay to say it. It's important to manage people's expectations options. So if you can't take something on and give it 100%, then don't do it at all. Number three, turn off social media. Take a break from the hustle of the outside world and avoid going on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. They'll only distract you. For people who need social media for work, which is a lot of us, make sure you're logged out of any personal accounts so you don't get pulled off task. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Have you heard what President Trump said recently?
Newsmax, you like Newsmax. I like it too. I like it too.
Now you can watch Newsmax TV and get the truth about Trump from Bill O'Reilly, Mike Reagan, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, and more. Newsmax TV is America's fastest growing cable news channel, now in 70 million homes. Find Newsmax on DirecTV, Dish, Xfinity, Spectrum, Optimum, Fios, UVerse, and more systems. See Newsmax TV today. It's real news for real people.
Hey, people at my friend's company got blackmail emails.
Yeah, it's a popular type of spear phishing attack.
Wow, that sounds serious.
It is. Scammers claim to have compromising information, like a video, and threaten to share it with their contact list, unless the victim pays a ransom.
What if they target someone at our company?
We're secured. Barracuda Sentinel uses artificial intelligence to block spear phishing attacks, including blackmail emails.
Well, that's a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda, your journey secured.
Freedom doesn't start in the White House. It starts in your house. Here's Helen Kriebel.
New York is considering legislation requiring manufacturers to make detergent pods look less appetizing. It is an overreaction to the Tide Pod Challenge, in which teenagers film themselves pretending to eat the colorful pods. About 80 teenagers reportedly tried it, which is dangerous. But so are hundreds of other household products that are not intended to be eaten, yet nobody is proposing to ban shampoo, paint, or oven cleaner. Such problems require the diligent attention of parents, not politicians. Government can ban products, but it cannot mandate common sense. Legislators cannot be everyone's parents. This just isn't that complicated.
For more, check out our podcast at lensofliberty.org.
More fulfillment in your business. Here to help us answer that question, Ed Milet. He's the founder of Milet Leadership Group. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be here.
So it starts with understanding your emotions and attracting those positive emotions more, right?
I think so. I think the first thing that makes us more fulfilled is really progress. If we're making progress towards what we really want, I think we begin to deliver the right emotions to ourselves. Because really, the quality of your life, if you really break it down, it's the quality of the emotions you experience. You are what your emotions are. So if on a daily basis, one person's delivering ecstasy, passion, joy, fulfillment, happiness to themselves, that's what they're experiencing, those emotions. They're going to have one life. On the other hand, and for many people, they've experienced discouragement or depression or frustration or fatigue. That's a totally different life. So really the key comes down to how do I deliver to myself the right emotions, as you've said? And I think that's towards making progress towards what you want can deliver those right emotions to you.
So a lot of entrepreneurs will connect over what a roller coaster entrepreneurship is and the highs and lows of your emotions because of it. Are those lows inevitable or can we raise them up a little bit?
I think you can raise them up. They're inevitable because there's obviously we're going to, in any business or sport, you're going to deal with a lot of failure and a lot of rejection, right? So it's how you respond to those things. You have to have this overriding belief I have that things don't happen to me, they happen for me. And they only happen for me if I'm making progress towards something. And that's why I'm this firm believer, and you've got to become obsessed and relentless about what it is you want to acquire. In other words, most people, when they get into a business or they want to go get fit or their life or they want to improve their relationships, they dabble. Our country is full of dabblers. The world is full of people that just dabble in different things. People that really win, that really make progress, have total immersion in it. They are completely immersed in it. They're obsessed. They're relentless about its pursuit. And there's a power to that, not only from an artistic standpoint and a fulfillment standpoint, but there's actually a scientific brain-based reason why you must be relentless and obsessed with something.
Oh, share that with me. What is it?
Well, there's a part of your brain that I'm not going to get a lot of detail in because people are smarter on that topic than I am, but you have a part of your brain called the reticular activating system. And what it does is it keeps you sane. And so it only screens into your brain the things that really matter to you that are important. It screens out all important things, unimportant things. So you don't feel yourself breathing. You know, not everything that comes in your way does it enter your brain, because the reticular activating system is designed to keep you functioning. But it's also powerful because when something does mean something to you, it screens it in. That's why, for example, you buy a new car. Right? That car was on the road the entire time before you bought it. But isn't it interesting that after you acquire this blue van or whatever it is you've acquired, you see them all over the road? They could be three lanes over on the wrong side of the road. And you go, blue van. They're everywhere. You see them. They were always there. Why do you see them now? You see them now because they've become so important to you. You've become obsessed with it because you're driving it. And that's also true in life and business. You can become obsessed with acquiring clients. All of a sudden, you begin to see people that were always there that are right for your company, or recruits for your company, or potential leaders in your organization, or the right product or the right technology. You see it. It was always there. That's why relentless people always acquire their success, because their reticular activating system is looking for it even when they don't know about it.
Thanks for explaining that, because I have a lot of people who talk about manifestation in my life, and sometimes it sounds a little woo-woo, like,
right.
Oh, yeah, you can just manifest your life. No. But there's actually a science behind it where you're hyper-focused on what it is that you want.
There is. There's two elements, I think, in acquiring something. There's your brain, and that's why you've got to be obsessed with something. And this happened to you in all different kinds of elements of your life. So when you were a student in school, you're studying hard. All of a sudden, those answers appear on the exam because you remembered reading them in the book. Once you're obsessed and relentless, you see those things. It's same in life. The other part of it, though, that's important is your body, is moving your body, is getting into a state where you're at a peak elevated state. And I tell people this all the time. The world has changed. So all these personal development books that were written 20 and 30 and 40 and 50 years ago, there are tons of things in there that are applicable to today. But there's also some things missing. And in today's world, if you're going to be a business person, I think you have to be a business athlete. I think you have to move and think like an athlete. If you look at athletics, more and more athletes in the world train and think like business people. LeBron James is a businessman.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Kind of like Jay-Z says, I'm a businessman. I'm a businessman. And LeBron is a businessman. Kobe was a businessman. You think about Tom Brady. He's a businessman. They think and train like business people. I will tell business people they need to begin to think and train more like athletes.
Is that from a physical standpoint or more from a mental perspective?
Right, both. I don't think you have to be a ripped, totally put together, chiseled athlete to win in business. Lots of people prove that that's the case. You don't have to be. However, I do think in moving your body, it changes your state. Someone who's sitting all the time and not moving themselves feels a certain way. It's very rare, if you've ever gone for a run or done some jumping jacks or worked out, that you don't leave there with those endorphins kicking in and you just feel better. Most business people that are successful will tell you most of their great ideas occur to them when they're working out.
Yeah, I can totally speak to that. Absolutely.
Isn't it true?
So let's talk about the person who has the passion for their business, but perhaps they don't have that hyper focus. Can you get that obsession?
Certainly can. And one of the ways you do that, that's a great question. One of the ways you do that is who you're around. There's a ton of power to associations. There's a ton of it. If you look at your life right now, I tell people this often. If you look at the last 90 days of your life, beyond, say, your children, who are the five people you spent the most time with, right? And you've heard this in books before, but I'm gonna say it a little bit differently. If you look at their lives, whether it be in the area you want, their body, their money, their business success, their happiness level, my bet is that your life is within about a 25% margin of theirs. And what most people say is they say, I wanna change my life. I wanna make a difference. They're not willing to move their body. They're not willing to get obsessed and relentless. They're not willing to do the work. And they're not willing to change or add to the group they hang around. You've got to add people to your group that make you uncomfortable. Anybody listening to this knows, if you're not in real good shape, for example, if all your buddies are about the same as you, you never think about it. But guys, the minute that guy walks in with a six-pack abs and he's ripped and you and your wife and the girlfriends are sitting there, all of a sudden you're a little bit more conscious of what you look like. You're a little bit more sensitive to it. Same with business, too. You've got to have people around you who make you uncomfortable, that stretch you. If you have the kind of friends that when they come over, you don't have to clean up the house. You can sit around and look at like whatever you want. They're great friends. They're lifelong friends. You should keep them. But you got to have a few people that you go, let's clean up. And they make you want to clean up your life. They make you want to be better. They make you inspired. They push you. That's how we change our focus level, is people around us force our focus.
Sometimes it means cutting people out of our lives, too.
Unfortunately, true. In my life, I know when I started out in business, I had this great group of friends that I grew up with. But I knew that I wanted to go be somebody. I knew that as good of friends as we were, I wanted to win even more. And it's a really difficult thing to do. And I think the most important thing isn't necessarily all the people you eliminate, but who you add. There's such power to who you associate with. Because if I live my life at 100 degrees, and that's where I'm comfortable, and you live your life at 75 degrees, just through proximity, I help you heat your life up, and you are no longer comfortable settling for 75 degrees of happiness, of wealth, of fulfillment, of peace. You move towards where you are, but you've got to change that group and seek out people who can add to your circle and make you uncomfortable.
Thank you so much for all of your wisdom today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
My guest, Ed Milet, he's the founder of Milet Leadership Group, and we are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.